The reality shows are over. The off-season storylines, they're kaput. It's time to drop the puck on the Toronto Maple Leaf season down at Scotiabank Arena. It is the Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Montreal Canadiens, Toronto Maple Leafs, 7 o'clock tonight on Sportsnet. First time since that 3-0 defeat in Game 7 of their postseason series. Not that long ago, Leafs start the quest to change the narrative surrounding this team of 5 consecutive first round, even if you want, I don't know if you want to call the 5-game series against the Columbus
Blue Jackets. Oh, yeah, no, we can call it that. Yeah, we can call it that.
Yeah. The quest to change that narrative starts today. Let's bring in our friend who was kind enough to do double duty, Nick Kyprios. You just heard him on Real Kipper and Born. He's going to stick around for the start of the show. How's it going, Kipper?
Gentlemen.
Awesome. A little OT. That's thank you, Kip, for doing this. We appreciate you putting in the time and a half with us.
Time and a half? I've never done this in my life. I've broadcasted for over 20 years. I'm like, you want me to work every day?
Yeah.
Steven, what's that like?
Are you out of takes?
Yeah. That's right. You only have so many takes, you know. Then you're done. Like then your life's over.
I'm out of material. I'm done. I'm a comedian now with no jokes.
I'm hoping you have like 20 minutes left of takes, and then whatever happens after that, I'm fine with. But
It does write its own script, though. That's a good news for the Leafs.
Yeah,
and Montreal now these days, the Canadians, they write their own stories. It's not hard.
No, it's not. So the start on paper is kind of easy-ish. I mean, I'm talking about a game against the Montreal Canadiens as easy, which is weird considering they just lost a 7-game series to them. But then you got the Ottawa Senators for 2. I mentioned the offseason narratives. Everybody's talked about them ad nauseum, whether it's Mitch Marner or the breaking through in the postseason. Like, is this start to this season any different than any previous years? Is this extra important? Do you see that at all?
Yeah, I think so. And it really goes to the unknowns. And while you do know what you're going to get out of Marner and Matthews and Riley, you don't necessarily know what the rest of the team's going to bring you. And I think for Bunting and Nick Ritchie, these two players in particular, people are anxious. And, you know, go goalless in the first 2 games or lose 1 out of 2 or possibly 2 out of 3. And let's see what the narrative is in this town. And that's something new to the Richies of the world and the Buntings. Jack Campbell now comes in with a little bit more of the number one status. So there's a different mentality in that. Those questions will be answered. You know, Leaf Nation, they think they're going to have all the answers after 60 minutes tonight.
Well, and it's funny because that reminds me of I don't know if you read the Austin Matthews piece that Emily Kaplan did for ESPN, the kind of the glam story about Austin Matthews and his buddy Justin Bieber. And I guess this is the ESPNing of hockey, right?
Yeah.
They're going to make stars out of these guys. So it's a really good piece. Emily did a really nice job on it. I give her a lot of credit. But he talks about, you know, one of the lines in there is he kind of talks about what it's like playing in Toronto and about how everybody, the notion that everybody in Toronto, you know, grew up playing hockey and is a kind of a part-time coach. I'm not sure either of those things is actually true. And I'm not sure how many, you know, many people he's encountered on the street in the last couple of years, because we weren't on the street that much in the last couple of years. But you know what, Nick? I've seen a lot of Leaf openings over the years. I've seen the pipe band a whole bunch of times. But I think this one, what has intrigued me about this one is, like, if they come out like a rocket and have one of those great starts, it's going to be, well, yeah, let's see you in April. If they come out badly, no one's going to say, well, it's a long season, don't worry about it. Like, it's going to be full panic mode.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's almost like you can't win coming out of the gate here.
I don't get, Stephen, that narrative. I really don't. Of all that matters is April. There's 32 teams now in the league. There's so many coaches right now. You know what their Stanley Cup is? Making the playoffs, mm-hmm. Just making the playoffs. They can sell that to the owner. They can get an extension off of that. That is an accomplishment in itself today in the National Hockey League, just making the playoffs. And it will be tough. And sure enough, you want to go 2-7 in October or 3-8. That stuff comes back to bite you at the end of the year. So this narrative for some Leaf fans suggesting that, we know it's not true. They're going to judge every game, every stretch, every month as if it is game seven. And that won't change. So that'll be lost after tonight. Anybody that mentions it's all about April, well, they haven't been paying attention, because getting to April is very difficult these days.
Well, and I guess the Maple Leafs have been, you know, exceptionally good at least getting to April. It's only five franchises who have made the playoffs in each of the last 5 years. The other four, though, the Penguins, Predators, Capitals, and Bruins have reached Cup Finals. Two of them have won Stanley Cups over that span. So it's a good news, bad news situation if you're talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Last time, Leafs were in a position where they played the rest of the league, not just the Canadian teams. They were life and death to make the playoffs. I know they've changed a lot since then. How will we know that this team is better than that team, Nick? Like, what should we be looking for here?
Well, eventually they're going to catch up to the likes of Colorado and Vegas and some heavier teams out west. You know, we're not going to judge anything from the Tampa Bay Lightning last night, but you assume when there's a Leaf Tampa Bay Lightning game, that would be a pretty good measuring stick. Again, it really, really will come down to, you know, how they perform, how they win games, and even how they lose games. All of it will be under a microscope, and that won't change here. So the unknowns, we're going in with, can Jack Campbell really be a number one goaltender? And you can dump on Freddie all you want, but there was a lot of times over that stretch that you had just mentioned about making the playoffs. He was a big part of that. And yeah, you can make an argument that he's not a playoff goalie. I get that. But as far as a goalie for the Leafs to help them make the playoffs, he did pretty darn well.
What do you, Nick, what do you think they're going to look like? Like, well, you removed from essentially playing in a TV studio last season, right? Like, that's essentially what it was, playing on a soundstage in a, you know, a kind of a hothouse division where you played the same teams over and over again. And some of those teams had, you know, some pretty difficult extenuating circumstances to deal with. The Leafs dominated, can't take that away, absolutely, and looked spectacular many nights. What happens now when you throw them back in with, you know, those other teams and, you know, and with, you know, under a different kind of scrutiny because you're playing in front of your actual fans?
Yeah, I think the eyeballs will be on a guy like Nick Ritchie. And even to a lesser degree, I don't even put Bunting where Nick Ritchie is. Nick Ritchie has to come in. And with all due respect, he has to fill in a Hyman scenario. Whether that means he's going to be able to score 20-plus goals, there are a lot of nights that Hyman drove, not necessarily the play, but opened up seams and was just a guy that constantly played a heavy game mm-hmm. and allowed the seams to open up. And he was a great skater. He is a great skater, great on the forecheck. And maybe his body is going to take a toll for it at some point for Edmonton, but Nick Ritchie has to be a little bit of that and, you know, at a fraction of the cost.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes in life, as they say, you get what you pay for sometimes. And I think that's the worry here, that you're trying to say to me that we need him to be a $5 or $6 million player, but you're only paying him $2.5 million. Why didn't the Boston Bruins like Nick Ritchie? He's supposed to have that type of Cam Neely feel to his game, right? Big, strong, top 10 draft player, can fight, can hit, can scare people. Why is he not a Boston Bruins? So that's the question that's going to be answered in the first few games from Leaf fans. And obviously you're not going to write him off after a week or a month, but he has to show an element of consistency that he has not shown so far in his career.
Yeah, I was going to say, Nick, it's got to be night in and night out, right? And that, like I was just thinking as you're talking about Hyman. Like, how many times with Zach Hyman did you say, well, he was kind of invisible tonight? Like, never, right? He was always visible because his work ethic was always visible. And you saw, you know, even on, if the team was having a bad night, he seemed to be working his tail off out there. He's, you know, those are big shoes to fill.
And I try to tell, you know, some of the kids, even the current players today, it's just you don't have to score to be noticed. And it's the shifts when you're not scoring. And Hyman was noticeable on a forecheck. He's noticeable how quickly he comes out of a corner to get to the front of the net or jam a loose puck or stick his nose in places where, you know, others hesitate to get to. And have they had that conversation with Nick Ritchie? Have they made it abundantly clear that this, you have to be noticeable even when you're not scoring two goals like you did in the exhibition game? Mm. And if he can drive that type of intensity, and he's been sleepy at times, guys, mm-hmm. and that's the knock on him. He will disappear. And then other games, you will notice him, but they can't be far and few, like we said.
Yeah, that sounds like the opposite of Zach Hyman. taking nights off or being sleepy, that was never him. And I understand why he would get some of the attention. I understand why Michael Bunting would get some of the attention. They're the new guys. They're the unknowns. No Austin Matthews today, obviously. No Austin Matthews for the rest of the week. I'm interested in John Tavares and what happens this season. This is a guy that saw some of his rate statistics go down last year. He's now a player into his 30s. He has produced more than enough. And I guess at times he gets criticized, but this is a guy that wears the C for this team. Where do you see his career going and this season as far as defining, I don't know, something around this team for him? Because he's going to be the guy, I guess, look to score here without Austin Matthews, he and Marner and Nylander. But he's going to have the headlines here for the first week at least.
Yeah, I take it both of you guys saw the all or nothing, right?
Yeah.
And kind of watched the way they kind of portrayed John Tavares. And I found it pretty accurate to at least what I thought, you know, John was. And he's not a rah-rah guy. He's not an emotional guy. It's hard to light a fuse. He's not, you know, when you watch certain star players on teams, and I'll include Sidney Crosby on that, like Sid has an edge to him, and Sid will spear you back. He's got no problem going at the likes of a Chara or a Ritsalainen. I think last season with Buffalo, they had a go at it, the two of them. John's not that kind of guy. And they made it abundantly clear in All or Nothing that John's a lead by example kind of guy. Well, how does he lead by example? He has to produce. Mm-hmm. He has to score. He has to produce points. And that's John. And if John's getting his cookies, it's a good thing. But outside of that, he's not that emotional type of leader. And John just needs to continue to produce. And if he does, he's okay. I'd like to see him with more assists, to be honest with you. He likes his goals. There's no question about that. And he's always around the net, and the 6 foot radius, the redirects, the tips, he's great at that. But in all honesty, I think he's needed to be more of a playmaking center than at any point as a Leaf before. I think it was only just the 1 year he had 50 assists in his career. And I'd like to see that number hit that at the very least this season.
If he's not kind of, you know, and you're right, like he's kind of the calm center, right? Like, you know, literally and figuratively, right? But
calm can be good,
yeah.
Steven. It can be sleepy too.
Yeah. I mean, well, this is a guy who, but you know, I'd say he's almost overly, like he was, you know, he played as an exceptional junior, right? When he was in Oshawa when he was 14, right? Like he's,
yes.
And he was kind of like a grown up at 14, like as I recall playing junior. That's the kind of, you know, so if he's not kind of the emotional center of this team, who is?
Yeah, that's you read Emily's article in ESPN, and doesn't seem like Austin really is, you know, wants to be that guy, because that means dealing with all the stuff that she had mentioned that he wants to avoid. If you ask me right now, it's Morgan Riley and it's Mitch Marner. Those are the guys that I think. And, you know, Muzzin's quietly in the last year and a half, had one of those kind of quiet, when he says something, you kind of perk up because you don't really expect it. But now he's saying a little bit more. Those are the three guys that come to mind for me in that dressing room.
So they needed to play better defense. They brought in TJ Brody. They needed some more snarl or veteran presence, and they brought in Wayne Simmons. And I guess this offseason they thought they needed more mental toughness. So they went out and got this performance coach, Greg Harden. I'm sure, Nick, you've seen or talked to one of these mental aspect coaches in hockey. Do you put any stock into it? It feels like the organization well, they're trying everything they can to get over whatever mental hurdle might exist for this group. Do you think these athletes will buy into that?
It's 2021, man. It's like everybody's got one of those guys, and soon they'll be the highest paid in the organization, these mental coaches. You know, we've had conversations. Justin Bourne and I have had conversations on our show, and in terms of, you know, what develops. You know, Steven, you've been around a little bit around the block. Mm-hmm. We had this conversation of, you know, is it about a pat on the back, or sometimes is it a kick in the ass? And, you know, it's, where's that fine line? And again, when you watch All or Nothing, you watch Kyle Dubas, and this guy's all about believing in these guys and the process. And if they lost, it was because they were supposed to lose, because it's going to teach us something else. And then there's others that say, no, we lost because you guys were terrible, and this was wrong and that was wrong, and you got to be better. And, you know, what works? I mean, we've had two extremes here. You can't, you got Lou Lamoriello on the one side, and then you got Kyle Dubas with, you know, a good cop and bad cop on Lou's side. And I don't know what the answer is for this team. I really don't. All I know is that whether they get their inspiration from a mental coach or Kyle patting them on the back or a kick in the ass, something better work this season, or else this thing may blow up.
Yeah, it's a large season, to put it mildly. Nick, we appreciate you taking extra time out of your day. I know, working hard, doing 2 hours of radio 5 days a week, and then we ask you to do 20 more. We do appreciate you you joining us today. Enjoy the game tonight, Nick.
Don't tell Justin Bourne I said this, but it's not really that hard.
Oh, okay.
Not really that hard.
I don't think he's listening.
Enjoy the game, everybody.
All right, see you, Nick.
See you, pal.
Nick Kyprios, host of Real Kipper and Bourne. Luke Fox did a nice job writing a little story on Mr. Greg Harden, who has worked with Tom Brady. He's worked with Michael Phelps. He's worked with some big-name athletes. He's worked at the University of Michigan as the, what is his term, the Associate Athletic Director of Athletic Counseling. He is the peak performance coach for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like I said, they've tried things, right?
Yep.
Kyle Dubas has seen some of the issues with this team, and he's done his darndest to address them. TJ Brody was a nice addition.
Mm-hmm.
Blue line looks good. A lot better than it did a couple of years ago. What can you do about the contracts that are already signed by those big-time forwards, limiting your ability to perhaps make this a deeper lineup? But if there is truly a mental hurdle that this team needs to get over, to overcome, perhaps this is the guy to do it.
Well, look, this is all, I would say everything's gone according to plan, except the winning part. But the other thing that hadn't, you know, is and the pandemic, right? And so the flat cap. So that those four contracts look slightly different than they did back when that plan was being enacted, because you thought the cap's going to go up and up and up, and we're going to have wiggle room, and it won't be so, we're not going to lock ourselves in as much as they now are locked in. So, in terms of the, I've heard lots of folks, you know, around not just this sport, but all sports talk about the generation of athletes that you can't go in there and it's you can yell at them all you want, but
yeah.
they want the how, the why, and the process. And I get it, right? They ask questions. They're not automatons, and they're not scared. They're not scared of those yelling authority figures. They're very accomplished. They've got to this point. And, so why do you want me to do this? And if I do this, what's going to happen? Right. They ask questions.
Yeah.
And if they're being abused, they call their agent. So that's the 21st century way of running a sports organization, not just a hockey team. But if you're not good enough, and the pieces don't fit, you can't motivate your way out of that, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, well, but that's the thing. There appears to be enough talent on this team, right? Something inexplicable.
I don't know.
Because, well, look at what happened in that seven-game series against the Montreal Canadiens. That wasn't logic. There's nothing logic-based or looking at the hockey reference pages of those players other than, okay, maybe power play. The power play could have been better, and you know what? They were 0-for-7 in the final three games on the power play in that series, and you will recall that a couple of those games went to overtime. So if they score one goal in on the power play in games 5 or 6, they win the series. But other than that, like, they were the superior team during the regular season.
Yes.
They looked the superior team through 4 games of the series. What happens in games 5, 6, and 7? Well, something that we can't quantify, right? So that's where you go to a person like this.
Yes, I get that part. And, you know, their power play was a bit of a mystery all along, right? Why do these pieces not add up to the greatest power play on earth, right?
Right.
And I asked everybody we had in last year, every hockey person,
right,
said, why? Explain to me. I'm not a hockey person. I don't understand the X's and O's. Tell me why their power play is not better. Because look at those guys. They're all really good.
Yep.
Shouldn't they be great on the power play? They're great, you know, and they're scoring. And no one had. So, yeah. So I'm still waiting for that one.
Yep.
They lost in a playoff series after being up 3-1 on a team that they finished, 28 points ahead of in the regular season. Although, you know, again, within a bizarro bubble world where they only played among themselves, right? They should have won that series. They should have won that series. They were the best team among those seven. I don't know what happened to that series. What I'm saying now, though, is now thrown into this much larger pool of a whole bunch of other teams and in a lot of cases, they're going to face a style of play that they did not have to face within that Scotiabank North Division. I'm not sure where they stack up when we're talking about Colorado or we're talking about Tampa, Tampa last night, but Tampa. When we're talking about Vegas, when we're talking about a whole bunch of other, how do they stack up when they have to play a team like the Islanders who are just really hard to play? I don't know. I know what the top end talent looks like, but I think the jury is out. I think the jury is out on this team. And I keep going back to the previous year, which we have talked about, where holy smokes, they weren't going to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And then they got beaten, you know, and again, in weird circumstances in the bubble, but beaten by a Columbus team that just kind of outworked them and out-toughed them and all that stuff.
Yeah. Deriving meaning from this regular season might be difficult, but learning something about this team, I think that's very much on the table.
Yeah. You're going to, Like, I'm not sure what we learned last year. I'm still not totally sure.
Yeah.
But you will know. I think you're going to know by the time the calendar turns to 2022, you're going to know a whole lot more about these guys.
Before we go, tickets are available for tonight's game.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
It is shocking. And there could be multiple things at play here. One, hearing me say those words on the radio to you, citizens of the city of Toronto, it might be shocking enough, and there might be people that just never thought that that was a possibility, right? Like, would have never even checked to see if there were tickets available for the Toronto Maple Leafs and Montreal Canadiens opening night at Scotiabank Arena, the first time we've had 100% capacity in the city. That might be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a level of hesitancy to return to sporting events, but I find that one hard to believe, considering, okay, maybe we didn't have 30,000 quite at capacity for the Blue Jays.
But pretty close.
Pretty damn close, and capacity ain't 30,000 at Scotiabank Arena. Might also be the timing, because this is we haven't known that it's been 100% capacity for a month, but it's the Toronto Maple Leafs against the Montreal Canadiens opening night, Stephen. That is bizarre. And I know tickets are expensive, and I know fan sentiment, people are frustrated. What part of that is any different than the last 20 years?
The last 100 years. Yeah. Like, you know, look, I my entire life, you couldn't, like, the idea that you could just walk up and get a ticket for a league, you couldn't, right? No. That was not, you know, unless you knew somebody,
yes.
Right? Like, that was the whole, that was the mystique, right? Now, even there were, you know, there were some dark times during the Ballard years when lovely Stan Abodiak, who was the press guy for Ballard, would announce that sellout at time, and it wasn't. And they, you know, they were like this, because, you know, that was a bad time. Those were bad times, really bad times. And Stan never allowed the truth to get in the way of the alleged sellout streak. But no, in, like, you assume it's all inside, taken care of. You know, you would have to go and now some of the tickets, you know, a lot of the tickets that are out there are resale tickets. There is that, but there are honest to God tickets you can buy from the box office right now. I don't know how many season tickets they have. I thought they had I thought the place was pretty much blocked with season ticket holders. Presumably they're back in the building, right?
I would think.
And I know the capacity thing was sprung on the rest of us, but I'm not sure it was sprung on the Leafs quite so. I think they knew.
Yeah.
Just had a sense they maybe knew it was coming.
Well, the NHL knew, and yeah. we've talked to people that have relayed the fact that the NHL knew and the Toronto Maple Leafs knew. Maybe it's a pandemic thing. Tickets available also for Saturday's game against the Ottawa Senators, hockey night in Canada. It bears watching.
Yeah, I can't. I did not realize it until you started noodling around today, looking at this. It's also, you know, $800 for a pair of good tickets for that game. You know,
yes.
that's maybe not an impulse buy for a lot of people. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe the fact that they've become available in the last week, people, you know, when you buy your Leafs tickets, if you are someone that goes to a Leafs game every year, you got to put some aside. You got to think about that. That's not a... Yeah, it's like buying a car, right? Like, you don't just walk into the dealership and buy a car. You got to think about it. You got to deliberate over dinner. It's a back and forth between you and your wife for a couple of weeks, maybe. And then eventually you pull the trigger. So maybe that's it. Maybe, you know, they come back the end of this month and things will be different.
But if you walk up there tonight, no, I don't know those guys. Are those guys still out in the street? There's no paper tickets anymore, though, right? So what do those guys do?
That's a great question. Because
surely this hasn't wiped out the on the street scalper. God knows that'd be
devastating. That was my experience going to Leafs games as a child. Was my dad would look at the schedule and he would see, hey, Tampa Bay Lightning before they were any good at all. He's like, Tampa Bay Lightning, we're gonna go down there. We're gonna wait until about 5 minutes into the first period, and we're gonna grab some tickets to get into Maple Leaf Gardens, and that would be the Leaf game that I would see. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that person does now. You wait until the period starts and then go on StubHub? I don't know.
I don't know. Because I know there are no... I don't think there's anything such thing as a paper ticket.
I think you're right.
At this day. I think that did go... I think they still existed pre-pandemic, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think a paper ticket... Now, maybe I don't know if you can print them out. I have no idea. But it did occur to me that the gents that used to stand outside the Carlton College subway station there on Carlton Street and greet you as you emerged onto the street, often getting their tickets, you know, right from inside the team. I hope they find another useful, gainful means of employment.
Yes, one that's on the up and up. All right, so we'll continue to monitor the situation. Perhaps if you're out on the Garden or you see the screeching of tires as people turn around and go back into the city, because they realize the tickets are available, but they're apparently still available. Leafs and Montreal Canadiens to open up the season tonight, 7:00 on Sportsnet. When we come back in the National League Championship Series is former Blue Jays general manager Alex Anthopoulos, GM and president of baseball operations for the Atlanta Braves. He joins us next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I may be denigrated this series yesterday in talking about, you know, maybe the people, the sports fan in general not paying attention to this thing. You should have paid attention to yesterday's game. It was spectacular, spectacular game as the Braves beat the Brewers 5-4, punching their ticket to the National League Championship Series for the second straight year, which means more champagne in the hair of our next guest, who I saw wearing the goggles yesterday, Alex Anthopoulos, general manager and president of baseball operations for the Atlanta Braves. Congratulations.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, you must be getting used to these things.
You know what? I've made sure to try to enjoy 2021 more. Just, you know, you get spoiled or you take it for granted a little bit. And then when you go through what we went through in 21, it's been a really, really challenging year across the board. And a lot of times you didn't think we'd even be in this position. I realize I'm not ever going to take it for granted. I didn't realize that I did that. I thought, you know, I was still locked in and so on, but you just, you know, you realize and you kind of remember what it's like when you're not in it and how awful the month of August and September is. You definitely get spoiled and hopefully, you know, it's hard to do, but I'm going to try to make sure I enjoy it because you just don't know if it might be the last time. You know, it's certainly hard to get to the playoffs.
It's not a novel experience for you, Alex. You've been on teams, you've been going to the postseason pretty regularly, but how does it feel different? You know, you kind of alluded to it. This is, you know, we've all been going through weird times the last 2 years, but you guys had, one of the more challenging and eventful seasons that you could imagine leading up to, you know, getting into the postseason and now winning a postseason series. Like how do you compare this to your other trips to the playoffs?
You know, the first time in Toronto obviously was, you know, that was just the way that came about, and winning the division in the AL East, that was really meaningful as well, just because it felt like the mountain that we couldn't get to the top. And look, there were times for years in Toronto, it's like, am I ever going to see the playoffs? At any point in my career, you start to have doubts. And then obviously you look back at things that you could have done better and mistakes you made, and that's how you get better. And I look back a lot at 2014. I know I got a lot of grief for it at the time, and when I look back, it was right. It was well, yeah, I deserved it. And, but it's just as a young GM, you need to go through some of those things. But I think we were either tied for one of the wild card spots or you were a game up for one of the wild card spots. And, yeah, we didn't save money from a payroll standpoint, and that ultimately falls on me. Valencia was the only deal that we made. But, you know, frankly, I don't think I got it. I don't think I understood it. I don't know that I had the proper sense of urgency. And I think over time and experience and maybe being exposed to more things, whether it's from fan base, ownership, the city, the community, playing meaningful games is important. It's important for the employees of the organization, important for the city, important for the community. There's no guarantee that you're going to get in, but there's something to be said. It's a really amazing, incredible thing. Obviously, you guys have experienced it in Toronto, whether it's the Jays or the Raptors. It's a big deal. I'm never going to take it for granted again. I think, you know, one thing, if we're ever close, Billy Beane is certainly, you know, basically drilled it into my head that if you're close, you're around 500 or you're close and you have a shot and you, you know, believe in your team, you should take a shot. There's going to be a bunch of teams that just quit and peel away and then a few that add, and you can really, it's 2 months of games is a long time, and I don't think I'll ever lose sight of that fact. But again, I needed to fail. I needed to make mistakes to get to this point.
So you're telling me when you were below 500, you just lost Ronald Acuña Jr. for the entire season, that there was never a doubt that you were going to add to this team because you believed that you were going to win the division? Because that was an interesting time for your franchise and that division especially, and the fact that you did make those moves in the outfield, allowing you to go 40-20 since the trade deadline was obviously key to getting into the playoffs and then reaching the NLCS. There was never any doubt. You were never wavering as to your commitment to this team in this season.
Yeah, so a few components. One, on buying, 100%. No doubt at all, not even for a minute. Winning the division, had no idea, right? Like that, you just have no idea how things are going to play out. But in terms of selling, absolutely not. At the time, at the deadline, and no doubt, it looked bleak. We lose Acuña Saturday before the deadline. We lose Ian Anderson the next day with a shoulder, waiting for the MRI on Tuesday. We have the draft going on. And then coming out of the break, we were facing the Rays, the Padres, the Phillies, the Mets, the Brewers. It was crazy for those 2 weeks. But our run differential at the time, and it's very similar to 2015 Toronto, relative to the other teams in the division, was strong. We were ahead of those teams. Now, for a lot of reasons, we were underperforming. Guys were slow starters. But with 60 games left or more, we had enough games left, and we had still been competitive. And I knew that realistically, we weren't going to be able to add significant players till we got to the end of July. And it was, how do we get to the end of July? How do we come out of this break with these 2 weeks of games? And I remember I knew that very few teams are really motivated to sell at that point. But Jed Hoyer with the Cubs had come out, I think, 2 weeks earlier and basically said, I'm selling. I'm ready to go. He told the media that. So I called him and I basically said, look, we've lost Acuna, we've lost Ian Anderson. I know the minute we get back from the break, and I know during the break, our players are going to be thinking, who's going to be sold? We're going to start tearing this down. We have a really important stretch of games. We definitely are still in this thing. I'm going to add an outfielder, and I'm going to make some deals one way or the other. In the next 4 or 5 days, I am coming away with a player or players. And I was very transparent with him. And I said, look, if I have to give a little more right now to get a deal on the board no later than Friday morning, I will do it. So he knew I was serious about it, and we talked. I mean, we had very little time over the All-Star break. I'd gone back to Canada at the time at about 48 hours with my family because they had gone back early, but spent all the time doing that. And even when I did my media conference call on the Thursday night, it was very important for me to put it out there that we are going to look to continue to add. So we got Jock Peterson, and I knew from a clubhouse standpoint what he brings, but it was going to tell all of our players. There wasn't going to be, are you trading Charlie Morton? Are you going to start selling? Are you going to start tearing it down? And then we added Stephen Vogt the next day, and I was honestly trying to make a deal a day if I could, just continue to pump life into the team. Now, how it was going to work, were we going to win the division, were we going to get hot? No idea about that, but it definitely felt like the right thing to do, and we definitely had a chance, and there was no doubt about doing that.
But, you know, I'm just thinking, Alex, you're saying, like, look, Acuna is not just a guy, right, that you lose, obviously. You know, you lose a superstar. You had the situation with Ozuna. Soroka, you never got – well, you thought he was coming back, and then he blew out the Achilles again. Like, you had a bunch of stuff that, you know, was happening where you could have taken a different path, I guess, and said, look, that's just not in the cards this year. And you were, you know, what, 4 games out or something, but the division was there. I get that part. The division was very much there. But how did you communicate, like, when those things happen to the team? How did you communicate, you know, down to the people, you know, the people you work with, but also up to ownership that, we're going to take a shot at this. We're going to go for it, even though, you know, we seem to be, you know, under a black cloud right now.
Yeah, so I was asked that question. Hey, if things, it's, you know, at one point, what is the thought? What's the plan? I mean, our minor league teams are very close to Atlanta. So one of them is in Rome, which is about an hour away. And I was at the Rome affiliate, and there was a photo of Freddie Freeman and Jason Hayward and Craig Kimbrell. And so I sent it to Freddie at the time, and I made a joke about it. And he said, hey, so where did you get that? And I said, I'm in Rome. And we were just going back and forth on text. And he said, you know, why are you in Rome? I said, you know, I'm coming to see some of our young players because I think we still have a shot at this thing, and I still want to try to add. But I think obviously we have to trade some of our young players. I knew some of them were going to be in Rome. And, you know, at the time he was like, well, that's going to be a challenge. We have so many holes. We have so many needs. And he was right about that. But I think there was a few components. We scaled back payroll in the offseason, obviously, with COVID and so on. We lost a lot of our depth. Attendance, our financial outlook improved significantly from November of 20 to July of 21. And our chairman, Terry McGuirk, came to me and said, look, our financial outlook is much better. So if there's an opportunity to make the club better, and that's what you want to do, and that's what you believe in doing, you have the dollars to go and do that. And that was huge for me. And at that point, I just went to work and with our group. And look, we weren't going to replace Acuna by himself, or like you talked about, who Oscar Arnaud was throwing the ball where. Travis d'Arnaud was out for a long period of time. Soroka, like you talked about, obviously Marcelo Zunas as well. But no one player is going to replace any of those guys. But if we got a collection of players, just on the aggregate, we should be better. And we were already keeping our heads above water. We were capable of a lot more. And again, even our expected wins and things like that were much lower, were much higher than what we had done. And the guys had got off to really slow starts. And eventually you felt like that was going to turn around by the end of the year. And we knew we would get d'Arnaud back in August and Ian Anderson back in August and Noah back in August. So if we can keep adding to the club, the last 6-7 weeks of the year, we have a chance to really go on a run. And, you know, besides the fact, it's the right thing to do. You know, we weren't 20 games out. We weren't a terrible club. We weren't playing well. But there was upside there if we could add the right players.
Yeah, and you had a player the caliber of Freddie Freeman, which is always a good thing when he can hit a home run like he did yesterday against one of the toughest pitchers there is, righties, lefties, but especially lefties. So I saw you in a television interview yesterday on the field with your kids, and you talk about soaking this thing in more this year, considering what you've been through, what everybody's been through, and just, you know, absorbing those moments more. Like, how important was that yesterday for you to have your family with you to celebrate on the field?
Yeah, you know, I think going to L.A., they were very family-oriented. And not to say Toronto wasn't, but even to a whole other level overall. And I think, you know, we didn't have families traveling with us in Toronto when I was there. And we started doing that in L.A. And, again, this is not to, you know, this is more of a compliment to L.A. It's not that, you know, obviously you learn from experiences, and if you go places and you see things you like. But just the way families were treated, the family room and so on. And I had a young family at the time that obviously moved from Canada to California, which was a massive change for them, for the kids, for my wife and so on. And seeing how we were embraced by Andrew Friedman and his family and the people at the Dodgers and everything that they did there. And I took that with me. It was really impactful. And when I came to Atlanta, one of the first things I wanted to do was I went to see what the family room was in Atlanta. And it was really small. And I remember saying, we needed to expand it. And if that meant that we had to take money out of team payroll, I felt that was critically important to do. We didn't have a staff from a family standpoint. We have two people that we hired that are full-time, that are just dealing with players' families across the board. I think, again, at the end of the day, when you're trying to get players, the dollars are ultimately going to rule. But when it's a tie and it's close, I think some of those things are important. And we all go through a lot. We're away from our families. They go through a lot. So for them to experience some of those things, I think it's really important. Because these, you know, sports are great. They're great in so many ways, but they're hard on families across the board, whether it's players and staff. And for them to be out in the field and to experience it and to enjoy it, I think is really important.
So your reward for all this is you get to face either a 106-win team or a 107-win team.
Yeah.
So that's look, it's been a long time since an Atlanta team played in the World Series. You know, you guys have been there. You've been close. You've been in the postseason. Alex, how do you feel looking ahead to either the Dodgers or the Giants now?
Yeah, you know what? You realize the more years you get to experience it is it's not always the best team. I thought our 2019 team was amazing, and obviously 2015 in Toronto I thought was a great club. And again, we lost to the Cardinals in the DS, and obviously we lost to the Royals in the CS, but I think who's playing well at the right time, guys that step up and so on. And obviously both of those guys, I work with both of them. They're two of my best friends in the game, and Andrew Friedman, Franz Zadie, and I spoke to both guys. And I have a Braves hat, and I want to do what's right for the club, but I care for both guys, I'm friends with them for life and their families and so on. And they're great. I'm really grateful for the fact that I got to work with them for two years. It was huge for me in so many ways. But again, look, no doubt, they had great years, but the Brewers had a great year as well. And just in a short series, anything can happen at any time. You look at what happened to the Rays. They're a great club. They're a great run organization. You guys see them all the time. You get into a series, anything can happen. So at this point, I like the way our rotation lines up. Our offense without Jorge Soler now is obviously, that's certainly a huge hit. And our bullpen is starting to throw the ball a lot better as well. So I think a lot of things, we started to advance, and I just found out today, Atlanta, for the city of Atlanta at least, they haven't been back to the CS since 2001. You know, we had got there a year ago, but we didn't have any home games, and it wasn't the same. So for the city and for the community to finally have a CS game in Atlanta, it's been 20 years. It's a big deal, and I'm certainly proud of that as well. But, you know, again, you get to the Giants and Dodgers, and I'm sure people will look at the win totals and say that we probably don't have a shot. And I think a lot of people felt that way when we played the Brewers. But I think we have a good rotation in the playoffs. I mean, that's what happened to us a year ago as well. If you pitch, you're going to be in each game.
How do you watch that game? You just root for extra innings tomorrow? Like, what are you hoping for? 18 innings?
Oh, I got asked that question. You're 100% right. I'm hoping for 18 innings.
All right, well,
I'm not kidding, too. Yeah,
I know you're not.
I hope it goes 20. Yeah. I hope it goes 20 innings because they only have one day off.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll be rooting for that as well. Who doesn't love extra inning playoff baseball? Alex, congrats again on another NLCS appearance, and best of luck going forward. Thanks for this.
All right, guys, really glad to be on. Appreciate it.
There's Alex Anthopoulos, General Manager, President of Baseball Operations for the Atlanta Braves. And, yeah, he knows what it feels like to get champagne in his hair and in his eyes.
Yeah.
So congrats to him.
That was, it is a great story because, boy, there are a whole bunch of arrows pointing in the wrong direction for them, right? And when Acuna went down, I think everybody, you know, because they were kind of scuffling. NL East was a mess. You know, no one else really took charge of the NL East, so that didn't hurt. But, you know, find your equivalent to Acuna. You know, like if you want your Blue Jay equivalent to Acuna, you know, like think of, you know, the best player on your team, a guy who's a superstar, and he's gone, like knee blown out, gone. And you've already got other issues. And it would have been very easy to punt on the season at that point. You need ownership to support you in that moment. You know, Alex knows that because, you know, he's been through deadlines when he didn't necessarily have the backing of ownership. But you need ownership to say, yeah, go for it. You know, take your shot. And, they did a really nice job. Like I thought they would be life and death against Milwaukee. They played a really nice series. They did pitch really, really well. They're going to be in really tough against whoever they get in the NLCS. But boy, you know, it's interesting to see what, you know, like how you kind of remade the entire outfield.
Yes. Oh, at the trade deadline, it's wild. It is absolutely wild. Alex, I'm talking about trying to make a trade every single day. And I believe him when he says, you know, learning the lessons of the past and things that you did or wished you had done and didn't do, and the message that that can send to your clubhouse and the impact that it can have. And it does help. It helps to play in a division where, you know, you're 500 or a game below 500 and you still feel very much in it. And they had the worst record of any of the playoff teams,
yes,
right? Like that needs to be said as well. They did not reach 90 wins, I believe, the Atlanta Braves during the regular season. But everything you've read post-fact after the series yesterday, talking about what kind of an impact those trades had to the guys that played the game. I mean, we saw it the opposite of that a couple of years prior to 2013 when Jose Bautista and Casey Jansen were lamenting the lack of moves when they're in a series against the Astros. It is a real thing showing those guys that, you know, despite the hardships that we've gone through, I'm still going to keep adding. I'm going to add a jolt of energy, and it did, and it carried them to the end of the season.
Yeah, no, I think it does. I think it does matter. It's not like, again, baseball is not a rah-rah game.
No.
But it's a long season. But if, you know, in the middle of that long season, somebody, you know, the folks you're working for essentially say, nah, we don't think we're going to win. I think it's hard to press on. You know, you can press on with your individual goals and try and get your you know, I think Jose still tried to keep his numbers up, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm just guessing. It's the point where it becomes more of a team game, you know, in that sense. And I push back against the emotional stuff in baseball a lot of the time because it's all about fine motor skills, but I have seen teams and clubhouses kind of roll over and say, "Okay, if you don't care, we don't care."
Right. We have a great team here at Sportsnet 590, the fans. So great, in fact, that these Ray-Ban sunglasses have been sitting right over there.
Yes.
For, I'm not, like, 2 months. I'm not even kidding. And they haven't been touched, haven't been moved. And I'm confused as to what I'm supposed to do with them. Just look at them every day? Are they just going to be part of this studio forever and ever and ever? And I guess, you know, in 50 years, they're going to do tours of this thing and talk about how legendary it was that those sunglasses were unmoved.
If we were not at the tail end of a pandemic, do you think someone would have lifted them like in 10 seconds?
I wonder. Right. Really? I wonder. But yeah, I guess very, you know, good-natured, good-hearted people that work
in this
building.
Let's take that as the message here. That's about honest, caring, thoughtful people.
Let's talk to a thoughtful guy on the other side of the break. Renaud Lavoie, the Toronto Maple Leafs and Montreal Canadiens actually have a rivalry. You know, they just played in a playoff series and things got a little bit heated at times. We'll get you set for game one of the Toronto Maple Leafs season as we continue. Renaud Lavoie of TVA Sports. As the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Annis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.